Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, folks. I hope you're having just as wonderful a time as I am. I mean, things could not be better in life. The kids, the mama, just everything. You know, I mean, I sat back and I was on Skype last night. My son, my oldest son, as you guys know, was released from prison last month. He's got one small court case up in Missouri, so he's hanging with my mom and dad up there, and he got their computer set up with Skype and got a webcam. And last night, man, we just had an awesome time. Got to see mom and dad and the kids, and you know, my daddy and I had a tumultuous, is that how you say it, tumultuous? I don't know. It was a crazy relationship, high, low, up, down. Typical, I think, of father-son sometimes. I've had it with my own boys. But over the last decade or so, probably in my 30s, so, you know, 15 years or so, we got close. And then they moved to Colorado, and we moved to Florida. Then they moved down here, didn't like the hurricanes, moved back to Missouri. And the last 6 months or so, he's just kind of been lethargic, you know. He gets those winter blues. And last night, it was so fun to see him, and he's laughing and smiling, and everybody's making fun of me because they said, boy, you guys look like twins, except he's older. He's got a mustache like mine. Neither one of us have any hair, you know, and he's put on a couple more pounds than me. But, boy, it was fun. Lena, my oldest granddaughter, just stayed on my lap for about an hour as we chatted back and forth, and Jetty and the kids. I mean, it was just a fun time. And isn't that what it's about? It's about family. You know, that's why I love, I think, Howard's book, Onward, How Starbucks Fought for Its Life Without Losing Its Soul, because to him, it's about family, both at home and his family at Starbucks. And I think that's how we got to look at things. Too many times we get wrapped up in the fact that it's only business. It's all about the numbers. You know, I love business, have all my life, but it's interesting how different people see business in different ways. And sometimes when the going gets tough, you know, the tough get going, I think right now of what the central part of the United States, both north and south, is going through with the Mississippi as the water kind of flows into the Gulf. And the title of this 26th chapter is called Staying the Course. And as I remember what Alabama went through last year with the tornadoes, and then I see it again this year. When I know what Memphis went through last year with the floods, and I see what they're going through this year. When I see the infrastructure of the United States and how we've become a technology company versus an infrastructure company, and how our dams and our levees are not what they used to be. As I see with what the Mississippi Delta is going through, where the Mississippi River is rising 25 feet as it hits the Gulf of Mexico. I thought, staying the course. As we go into this chapter today, and you see the analogy where you do certain things because it's your life, it's what you love, it's not because it's easy, it's not because people will always make it, it's not because everybody agrees, it's because you know in your heart it's right. When I think of these farmers, when I think of these river rats that hang out on the rivers all their lives, and people say, why do you have your house there? Don't you know you're in a floodplain? They say, yeah, but this is our life. This is our tradition. This is our heritage. Plus, they make a lot of money down there with some of the logging and stuff. I realize that Starbucks, you and I, we're no different. If we know in our heart that the direction we're going is right, then we should not deviate from that. We should push and push and push. And that's what Howard talks about in this chapter. But you and I both know that we can push all day long, and man, it gets to be hell sometimes. I think of my best friend's wife, Jennifer Sexton, and Greg. You know, earlier this year, Greg had to have an operation and have brain tumor removed. And it was during this time period that I watched them stay the course. Her AdvoCare business is still growing. Her love for her husband is still growing. His drive to completely be healed is still growing. You got to stay the course. In church this week, we just started a new series called Faith, Hope, or Luck. And we're using gambling, actually, as the as the focal point. And in all three of these analogies I just give, it's about staying the course. It's about faith. It's about knowing what you're supposed to do. And in this chapter, Howard starts off by saying, throughout November 2008, as the leadership team and I worked diligently to restructure the budgets and the operation, an analysis conference loomed. Months earlier, this biannual event for investors and Wall Street analysts had been scheduled for December 4th in New York City. And it would mark the first time since March that at our annual meeting that I stood in front of shareholders when the company was not performing well. Twice he had to stand in front of them. Now here's where the situation I was just talking about with the Mississippi River comes into play. You know, when you're not doing well in business, when you're not doing well in life, the snakes are hovering around you. You can hear their tails rattling. You can see them. You know what? When the rivers start to rise, coming through the central United States, those water moccasins have to find a new home, and they'll crawl up in the trees and curl up and hang on tight. And when the water subsides, sometimes they're still up there, and people will be underneath, and those snakes can fall on you. Howard felt that way as he was going into the annual meeting. He didn't know who was friend or foe. He didn't know what was going to happen. He didn't know if at the end of the analysis meeting the stock would fall to $5 a share and some competitor would come in and try to buy the company. It's a scary thought when you think about it. But because the team and Howard were in the thick of the significant structural changes, the cost factors, everything, they hadn't really focused on this conference. I mean, they're scrambling now that just a few days from the conference, they're headed to New York. And on top of that, the CFO, the chief financial officer, had resigned. Good man. But just couldn't take it anymore, I guess. Went over to a technology company. Lord, that may be jumping out of the frying pan into the fire, but he left. And Howard made a decision, and we learned earlier in the book that he makes his decisions with personnel by the gut, instinct. He brought in Troy Alstead, an insider who was young. This would be his first role as CFO, and he was taking over a billion-dollar business that was losing money fast. He'd been with Starbucks 16 years, grew up there, really. He was intelligent, articulate. He had the faith of the partners. They were headed to New York. See, Howard knows that if you select the right people on your leadership team, it doesn't matter if the snakes and the scoundrels and the critics are around you. You know that you hang on tight together. I know in my role at Ignite 360, I've always been the outsider. I came in during a tragic time period in their short-lived tenure in network marketing, a time when hopes had been crashed, dreams had been shattered, propaganda from the person I replaced had rung high. They'd heard all these grandiose stories about network marketing companies and how they made millions and millions of dollars and became household names and all that crap. Nobody ever talked about the hard work. Nobody ever talked about it's a 5-year process. You know, running a network marketing company, running a coffee company, it's all the same. Nothing happens overnight. You got to stay the course. And when you don't stay the course, then you will not succeed. You'll move back to getting rid of things, changing things. Change is inevitable, just like we learned here. But there are times when you have to stay the course if you're going to make it and make it right. Howard understood that. You got to bring in the right people. Sometimes it's the insider, sometimes it's from the outside. You know, I was really the second person that had been put into a position of leadership at Ignite 360 that was an outsider. The first person didn't work out at all. And I've never really fit in because I'm not in the office on a daily basis. I'm out of the office. You got to go with your gut. Sometimes you'll hire from the outside, but the majority of the time, as Howard has seen, you'll probably bring insiders in, or you'll go get an outsider who was once an insider and bring them in. Howard knew he had the right team as they headed to New York. It was going to be tough. There was going to be skepticism because of the young age of some of his people. But he also knew. Well, let me just read it in his words. I always trust my antenna to recognize people whose skill, knowledge, passion, and loyalty will align to serve Starbucks well, even if the person's resume might imply otherwise. Every CEO today, every leader listening, you know, we got to run it as a business. Too many times the corporations run them as a business, but the field force doesn't. They run it as a hobby. And that's what kills us. We don't want that. Howard says this, I promoted Troy, I just love that name, with no doubts that he would win the trust of Wall Street. Internally, his ascent was also gratifying for many partners who saw one of their own being rewarded for years of hard work and exceptional performance. It was a two-way street. Howard was going to shock Wall Street, but at the same time, he was rewarding and motivating the internal folks. This is what we want to do, especially if you're a launch company. You want to make sure you surround yourself with people that are loyal, that are going to be with you. I got an email last night, a personal email from BK Brake over at Veeam, and he said, I know you're swamped. I know you're going through this change at Ignite 360, but if you've got a chance, will you go over and vote? Give me your input on which one of my new Verve shots you think would be best. And I went over and I had 100 and some odd comments. I was reading through them and I started looking at it. Man, he had a slick can. It's a slick black can with silver. Oh, it looked good. You know, as a matter of fact, it looked good on a wrap on a car. But then the other can that he had to choose from was all white with the orange Verve and Vima colors. And I wrote, you know, BK, Vima is about health, pure health. I think the white can with the orange really shares the story. Because even if that white can was against other backgrounds, that orange Verve is going to shine. Black is beautiful. We all know that. But you got to look at what you have, the purity. See, when I look at last night what BK had shot me over, and then I was reading this about Troy's debut, I realized that Howard was looking for purity inside of his people, a purity that they were sold on the belief and on the culture and on the values so that there would be a pure message that was going to be shining and flowing at the Wall Street conference. See, this is the key. When you're focused forward and you're focused on where you're going and what you're going to do, then even in the midst of that anxiousness, even in the midst of the double questioning of yourself, are we doing this right, you'll know that you got to stay the course. See, Howard really gets into that in the book here. He says, we had chosen New York City as the hub of the global financial world, in a large part because the burden of proof of Starbucks' performance had shifted from the analyst to us. See, up until 2007, Starbucks was just too good to fail. We've talked about that. They were just growing leaps and bounds. So it was always the analysts that were deciding what was going to be the next push. You guys have heard on TV where they talk about, you know, where they missed the analyst projections, so the stock fell. That's kind of where Starbucks was. But Howard understood with a purity of heart. That's why I brought up BK's story here. That now the burden of proof lied on his shoulders and his team's shoulders. So instead of expecting the analysts to come to Seattle, they went to where the analysts were. The company was not delivering, and they knew it. Howard says, we'd accomplished a great deal during the past 12 months, but it seemed overshadowed by our most current news. We were down 22 cents a share and 8% in growth worldwide. Now, you know, we're staying focused on Starbucks. And you say, Troy, it's a coffee company. No, it's more than that, but here's what I want to go to. During this same period of time, some of the greatest companies in history had already failed. They hadn't been taken over. There was no hostile takeover bid or anything. They were flat gone, disappeared, no longer in business. The names were just a brief 135-year history, and it was gone. The government was passing out money to the greatest financial companies on Wall Street just so that the United States could stay afloat. At least that was what they were saying. I'm a firm believer that just if they fail, they fail. Somebody else come along. Auto industry, it didn't matter. The auto industry, Wall Street, mortgages, the whole kit and caboodle. My fishing industry down here was upside down. Starbucks was still making it, but they were down. And they were hemorrhaging like these others, just not as fast. But they were seeing it, and they came in to change it, and that's what the other companies had not done. This is unique here. Because, again, Howard, as we learned in a couple other chapters, not only did he rely on his insiders, but he always went to outside folks for friendship, too, because he wanted that consulting. He wanted that honesty. One of the things that I believe God has blessed me with is the trust of CEOs when I'm not in their companies, because they can call and talk to me. They can ask me questions. They can ask for third-party advice. And they know that it will not be shared. It was also, it won't be with rose-colored glasses. I tell them. See, you have to be open and honest at every level of your business. If you're a leader inside your company and it is not doing things well, then you need to let the companies know. And you CEOs and founders, you don't terminate a top leader because they get in your face and say, man, this just isn't working. You listen. See, the key to success is not really overcoming failure. It's seeing what is failure and making changes. This idea that we have to fail to succeed is about as asinine as the fact that God won't give you more you can handle. Just myths that people pull out of their butts sometimes. See, you don't have to fail. Starbucks didn't have to fail to succeed. They had to make some changes. That's the key, is seeing the change. So Howard went to Billy Etkins, who runs a successful boutique mergers and acquisition firm on Wall Street. One of the most intelligent minds out there. Billy's business, he listens. Howard brought him into New York. He was sitting at the apartment with the top leaders. The leaders were explaining what was going on, where they were going, what they planned on sharing. Respectfully, Billy gave them his unfiltered advice and his opinions. Some of the people probably didn't like it. None of us do. You know, you step on our toes, we say ouch. But they knew that his intentions were honorable, that it was to help them. That's all he cared about. So they listened. They trusted him. But Howard shares something here that most leaders don't share. Matter of fact, inside the direct selling world, for whatever reason, I know what the reason is. Everybody gets caught up in trends. Everybody gets caught up in, it seems like we all want to do things like everybody else. So a few years ago, there was this thing called attraction marketing, or the law of attraction, that came out. And so now nobody wants to talk about realistic things. Nobody wants to talk about failure. Nobody wants to talk about any of the critical stuff because, oh no, that might happen to us. Well, listen to what Howard says. He says, on Wednesday, December 3rd, a day before they're to have the meeting, The group gathered in an empty auditorium at Times Center on West 41st Street to rehearse our presentations. Sitting among empty rows, my mood was spiraling to levels that it had not sunk to in ages, if ever. I sensed a level of insecurity which was understandable given our lack of prep time and the challenges we were knee-deep in back home, which constantly, they were on the phone left and right. Hired says it was kind of like a hand-to-hand combat. We were fighting to save our business. But he says, when members of the leadership team took the stage, I was quick to interrupt or to redirect their presentations, not making it easy for anyone to muster confidence. See, Howard, because he was so stressed out, was actually stressing out his leaders. So one of his top boys looked over at him and said, "Howard, respectfully, I really think you need to leave." So he grabbed his coat and off he left. Now, he didn't go home and sulk or pout. He called Billy and said, "Let's go have dinner." And even while they were having dinner, when he was trying to explain to the waiter what he wanted, he got frustrated and was snapping at the waiter. That's how angst he was. Billy sat down and looked at him, smiling. Howard looked over and he said, "You know, the stock could drop to $5 tomorrow, Billy. We could be taken over." Now here comes the important part of the whole call today. Listen. He said, "This was again such an uncharacteristic fear for me, not to mention an unlikely scenario for the company, but my anxiety had reached a fever pitch. It had been such a long year, an endless treadmill, as Starbucks planned and executed new products and events, one right after another, and we were still waiting for most to bear fruit. I had experienced such highs at the annual meeting, the Pike Place roast, the New Orleans event, but yet now I had hit the lows. We'd already hit a big low when he closed the stores and laid off people, but now, you know, just a few days before the event, the CFO had quit. I'm exhausted, physically and emotionally." That's where he was at. "I know those feelings. See, in the last 6 months, I have tried to use all of my wisdom, all of the knowledge, all of the mechanisms in place to help a small Texas company prepare for launch. Long nights, weekends, traveling. It's never about titles with me, it's about performance. So when you get the call that the company has decided to axe your division, to them, because they're new to direct selling, it's just a numbers game. See, to me, I get to talk to the people, and damn it, I'm sorry, folks, but I hear this from people all the time in corporate America. They say, "Well, we looked at the numbers, and these people aren't performing, but not one time do they get into the trenches with the people like I have to know what they're going through, to know the financial or the physical emotions that they're going through, to know what else is in their life that might slow them down from just going out there and focusing 100% on a business, and to receive the phone call that says we're going to shutter it all and they're not going to have an opportunity to make any money except maybe off of some personal customers. It's heart-wrenching for me. So I know where Howard's at. You're exhausted emotionally, physically. In my case, you also hear that your income's getting slashed 60%. You're just going to be a salesman if you stick with all this stuff goes through a person's mind. But listen to what Billy had to say that night to Howard, because I wrote it in my journal. It might go on a T-shirt before too long. He said, "Howard, you have to stay the course. You have to stay true to your values and true to the company's core. Those are your rudder now. And when the seas comes and the winds shift, and the seas will come and the winds will shift, unless you believe that the economy is never coming back, or that all along Starbucks' value proposition and its connection to its customers have been a rouge, or that the millions of people still walking into your stores every week all over the world are kidding themselves, now is the time to stay focused on the moves that you have made to right-size the business, to innovate, and return to the core. The confidence of these factors will propel Starbucks forward and will make all of today's naysayers positive about Starbucks again. I'm absolutely sure of this. See, sometimes it takes an outsider to help us stay the course. It takes an outsider to see it. Now, here's the kicker. You listen to what Billy said. He said, unless you don't believe. I remember a phone call I received a couple, 3 weeks ago from the founder and CEO of Ignite 360, Dennis Dottel. And he said, Troy, I do not believe network marketing will work. Believe. You have to believe deep in your core. See, I firmly believe there will be a technology company that will come into the direct selling niche, that will offer the same type of services with the that will thrive in a huge way. Because I believe in network marketing. You just have to find the right niche, and it takes 3 to 5 years for a company to hit their stride. Just like it takes 3 to 5 years for a distributor to hit it. But here's the fun part. They closed out that dinner. They went home. The next morning, December 4th, the team's in the green room waiting. 11 of their top 30 stockholders were in that room. They were back there cringing. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? And lo and behold, Bill Bradley, former U.S. Senator, Knicks player, 2 times NBA champion, and board member of Starbucks, walked into the back room with a gigantic smile on his face. Now, there's nothing better than to know you've got a board member who's really the liaison between the stockholders and the management team coming into the green room, and for 15 minutes, all Billy talked about was their strengths, what they had done good, how they had made the hard choices, how the company was going to be turning around, and how the board believed in the team. That was the key. And by the time they walked out on stage, they were ready. They didn't talk about the hype. They didn't blow smoke up the butts of the analysts and the stockholders and the partners that were in the room. They gave it to them straight. We made the hard choices. We're turning around. We're not satisfied with where the shareholder value's gone, but we're dealing with it. We're making those moves. In other words, Howard and that team got up on that stage with very little preparation. And they found the fine line between confidence and overpromising. And they were ready to start the next part of that adventure. Tomorrow we start part 5 of the book. It's called Courage. And it's going to be fun as we go into this final stage of this book. Folks, I love every one of you, and I'm so glad that you have stuck it out with me. It's going to be some great stuff. I'll be making some announcements this week. It's going to be fun. Live life like it's an epic adventure. I'll see you at the top. Be back with me tomorrow morning for Radio for Your Mind. Bye now.